सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति.
We're in verse 23.
Atmanamikshet param prakashet. Atmanamikshet param prakashet. Ityagamuktek sulabhona bhavaha. Ityagamuktek sulabhona bhavaha. Natmaivadrisho yadika kateshe. Not my vadrishu yadika kateshe swayam tadanni bhavanam tadiksha swayam tadanni bhavanam tadiksha
atmanam iksheta param prakashet iti agama uktehe sulabha nabhavaha na atma eva drishyah yadi ka kata ishe swayam tad anibhavanam tadiksha.
So he says there's two statements. There are two statements that come in many forms that are made in the shastra. So he says, one, the first statement is atmanam iksheta. One should see the self. Atmanam is the self in the accusative. Atmanam iksheta. One has to see the self. It means one has to recognize the self. One has to have direct knowledge, aparoksha jnana, direct knowledge of the self. The other one is param prapashet. One has to know the Lord. One has to know the Ishwara. One has to know param, that which is the infinite. So we would take it like this. One needs to know the self. One needs to know the Lord. One needs to know the self of the jiva. One needs to know the truth of the jiva, the individual. One needs to know the truth of the Lord. It says, iti agama uktehe. For this ukti means statement. For this ukti statement of the agama, of the shastra. Shastra means the Upanishads here. Of the Upanishads and the other prakarana granthas that unfold the Upanishads. So for a statement such as this, one should know, one should see, have direct knowledge of the Atma, and one should know the Lord. For these statements such as this, statements, the meaning, the bhava of this, the meaning of such a statement, the bhava of such a statement, na sulabha, it's not easy. It is not easy to gain. It's not easy to gain that recognition. Sulabha, love, this love means to gain, to acquire. It can be also in the sense of knowledge. Su means easy. To sulabha. Sulabha means easy to gain, easy to acquire, easy to know. Na bhavaha. Bhava here is just meaning. The meaning of these Shruti statements, the statements of the Upanishads, that one should see the self, or one should clearly see the param, the infinite, or Ishwara. The meaning of this, of these such statements, is this. It's not easy, not easy to understand. Why? Na atma eva drishaha yadi. It says, if the atma itself, the atma eva, na drishaha, is not something that can be known as an object. Drishya, the word drishya means something which by its nature can be seen. It's a potential participle. It means it's able to be seen. It can be seen. So the Atma, yourself, by any of the means of knowledge that you have available to you, like for instance your eyes, you can't use your own means of knowledge to see yourself. Your eyes can only see objects that are within the range, or what we call the epistemological limits, of your eyes or your ears. And all of the means of knowledge that you have available to you are really based in the end on sense perception. Without any sense perception, you don't have any tools or any data to make your inferences or your presumptions, or even say there's no elephant sitting in the room. All of these ways that we have, all of these means of knowledge that we have, are really only function within duality. See? And so if you say, if the Shruti should say, you know, the Atma is to be known, the Atma is to be seen, one should see the Atma, how is that possible? How is it possible for the Atma to be seen or for the Atma to be known? Because when we think of something as being seen or as being known, we only really think of a subject-object relationship. Even if it's even if we think of it in terms of a meditative experience, we're thinking of a subject-object relationship. You know, like if I have a bliss experience or if I have a happy experience or if I have a negative experience, even if you're talking about any type of mental experience, even if you have a non-dual experience where for the moment, in like Nirvikalpa Samadhi, the subject and the object collapse into just one experience, when you come out of that non-dual experience, you say as the jiva, I had this experience of the self. And once again, you're immediately brought into that dual experience. I had this Nirvikalpa Samadhi experience and now it is gone. Right? So that's dual. Right? I have a non-dual experience within duality. And so then again, if I'm having an experience, even a non-dual experience, there's a differentiation between the self and the experience. And so with my means of knowledge, even with when I think of vrittis or mental cognitions in the mind, those are all illumined. What is the nature of the illuminer? Right? What's the nature of the self that does the illumining? You see, even because of the way we're set up as just as a jiva, as an individual within the creation, we're set up as in terms of subject-object. All of our experiences in reference to subject-object, whether it be a perceptual experience, or it be an emotional experience, a mental experience, or a meditative experience, it's always subject-object. And so always, even if I have in the subject-object a meditative experience, which is non-dual, if it's only an experience that doesn't have anything at all to do with knowledge, but is only an experiential state, when I come back, in other words, when that experience goes away, then even though that experience is profound and sacred, it's still an experience that I have had. So again, I come back into the subject-object relationship. So that being the case, how is it really that the nature of the subject itself can be known? Because all I am doing is knowing and objectifying experiences that are there held in the mind. So because of that, when the Shastra says the self should be seen, what exactly is meant by that? And how is it that the self can be seen, and who is doing the seeing? What is the means of knowledge that is being used for that to take place? So that's one problem. The second problem, which is very difficult, is how can Ishvara be known? How can the Lord be known? When we're talking about Ishvara, we're talking about an infinite creation, multidimensional infinite creation, which is viewed in the Shastra. That's what we're talking here from the standpoint of the Shastra. Ishvara is viewed as the self, which we call Brahman. And Brahman is an infinite being that manifests an infinite creation, an infinite consciousness, which manifests an infinite creation. That's Ishvara. So an infinite being in the form of this creation. Now, this Ishvara should be known. Ishvara can an infinite being be known through our means of knowledge? And we'd say, no. An infinite being can't be known through our means of knowledge. Right? Because you're existing as a finite being within time and space. Right? Within time and space. Time, space, place. And so, what is this finite being with finite means of knowledge? What are the epistemological limits of such a finite being? You would have to say, well, normally, something like this, normally there's epistemological limits. But epistemology means, you know, the science of knowing, how we know what we know. And so every means of knowledge that we as a human being have available to us has limits. We don't have a limitless means of knowledge in order for us to know Ishvara or to have an experience of the whole infinite Ishvara Upadhi or Ishvara, Ishvara's form. That's not possible. And so when the Shastra says, you know, you should know yourself, well, the self's not objectifiable, so how can you know it? You know, it's the ultimate, yourself is the ultimate subject. And then it says you should know Ishvara, you should know the nature of the Lord. The Lord is infinite. How is it possible for the means of knowledge that I have to know something that is infinite? So, what he says here is these Shruti statements, these statements that are found in the Upanishads, the meaning of them, the bhava, the essence, the bhava here just means the meaning of these statements, not sulabha. It's not easy to understand. These statements are not easy to understand. So then he says, na atma eva drishaha yadi. If the Atma itself, drishyaha, cannot be objectified as an object of knowledge, ka katha ishe, what to speak of? Katha means story. Well, then what would you have to say about Ishvara? You can't objectify the nature of the Atma, of the self. How can you possibly objectify the nature of Ishvara, which is considered to be an infinite being? You can't objectify the self, let alone. So it's kind of, it's in the Sanskrit, it says, if the Atma itself can't be objectified, then how can you even talk? How can you even talk about Ishvara, about the Lord? If you can't objectify the Atma, what on earth can you say about objectifying the Lord? That's what he says. So then he says, what's the solution to it? He says, Swayam Ted Ani Pavanam Tadiksha. He says, the Iksha means the knowledge, the seeing, the knowledge of the Lord is Swayam, oneself. So the Iksha, the seeing of the Lord, is Swayam, is oneself. Tad Ani Bhavanam. Ani Bhavanam is becoming food. The knowledge of the Lord equals becoming food for Him. The knowledge of the Lord is oneself, equals oneself becoming food for Him. Annam is food. Ani Bhavanam means becoming food. So oneself becoming food for Him, that is the Iksha, that is the knowledge of the Lord. Okay. So this is Ramana. Reason that the self, which is the non-objectifiable subject, and I say that your Atma, who you are, is the non-objectifiable subject, because if it's objectifiable, then you're left as the one objectifying it. So a differentiation has been made again from this, between the subject and the object. So that's why you have to say your being, the conscious being that you are, who is ultimately the subject, the one because of whom the world of experience is known, whether it be a mental experience, emotional experience, perceptual experience. The self, who is the bottom line, you know, as the subject of all of your personal experience that you have. That self itself now can't be objectified, because that leads to an infinite regress of the conscious being that you are continually, infinitely being objectified. Because if the one who's the knower of any type of object, the knower of any object, can itself be objectified, then who is the self objectifying that? And if that one can be objectified, then who is the self objectifying that? So that leads to an infinite regress. So what you have to say, it has to stop at yourself. It has to stop at the conscious being itself. If the conscious being has to be objectified, then that's an infinite regress, and you can never know yourself, because you can never get there. Okay? And so then how can you know yourself? And the only way that the self can be known is because it itself is its own experience, not dependent upon any type of means of knowledge to illumine it. So we say like this: I don't have to bring in another sun to illumine the sun so that the sun can illumine the world. I don't need to bring in another luminary. The luminary exists as the sun itself. So the sun illumines the world and it illumines itself. See what I mean? I don't have to bring in another light to light it up. So like that, with consciousness, do I have to bring in another consciousness to give me the experience of consciousness, or to give me the experience of myself so that myself can be known? Well, we would say yes and no in this way. The experience of yourself as a conscious being is self-luminous. There's nobody saying that nobody has to come in and illumine that consciousness for you to say, I'm a conscious being. In fact, the conscious being that you are illumines all experience that you have. It's the center of all experience. So there's nobody illumining you just to make you say, I'm a conscious being. You don't need your mind for that. Your mind needs you to illumine it. And so consciousness itself is the bottom line of every being's experience. I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being, I'm a conscious being. If your animals could talk, they would say, I'm a conscious being. Yeah. And so that's a given. It's kind of like the bottom line given. So your amness, your consciousness, is self-luminous because that is its nature. Just like the sun's nature is light, we could say, within the parameters of this example. For consciousness, you would say, the nature of consciousness is consciousness. And because of that, we say consciousness, or your very being, is self-evident or self-luminous. There's nothing behind it to light it up, because it is itself the luminary thing. Now, if that is so, then it is possible for you to know yourself. You already know yourself experientially by saying, I am, I exist, I'm a conscious being, and everybody says that. So the self-experience is already evident for you as a conscious being. It's not something that needs to be obtained or gained or can be. Can you say, let me gain more, be more of a conscious being? You can't change the consciousness. You can change states of mind. You can say, like, this is how things get confused. Let my mind be more alert. Let me be more clear. Let me have more quietude in my mind. Let my mind be more meditative. You know, let my mind be more alert to my experiences. You can say all of those type of things. Mm-hmm. But when you get to just me, the core of your being, can I say, let me be more me? No, you could say, let consciousness be more consciousness. You can't say that. You know, you could say, let my mind be more, differentiate more my consciousness, if it even knows to say such a thing. But you can't say, let consciousness be more conscious. You know? Say, let my mind be more conscious. But you can't say, let consciousness be more conscious. So the consciousness that you're experiencing, not as an abstract phenomenon, but as your very center of me-ness, what makes me me, that always remains the same. Just to give another example, I can say, I am happy, I am sad, you know, I am agitated, I am tired, I am young, I am old. The me that is being denoted by the words I am is always the same. It's just like my mother saying when she was really old, She said, you know, I'm the same person, but I'm just so old now. I'm the same person, but now I'm in this old body, you know. And you could say, you know, the person that I am, I, me, was young, or I, me, was happy, and now I'm sad, or vice versa. That one doesn't change. That is the one who's central to all experience, and that is the one that we mean when we say self-evident or self-luminous. So it doesn't have anything to do with perceptual consciousness, which involves the mind and the sense organs, or emotional consciousness, which involves states of mind. It involves the me, the one who is present to all of those states. That one never changes. It is self-evident. It is. See, these are the words we use: svitta siddham, svaprakashatvam, self-evident, you know, self-luminous, my own presence. But that one is not something that I can re-experience or have more of an experience of. However, the problem, so that's not a problem. It's not as though you even, it's not, in fact, it is a problem because we're only used to knowing in terms of what we can objectify. We're not used to recognizing the one who's behind all of the objectification as being its own self-experiential whole that doesn't involve subject or object. We don't know about that. We take it totally for granted. And we can take it totally for granted because that self-luminous me is present to all experience that I have. So, the problem is not ever gaining an experience of yourself. Like when we talk about enlightenment and self-knowledge and all, this has nothing at all to do with gaining an experience of yourself. That experience is already there. It's a given. It's changeless. It never wavers at any time. You're never going to gain a more or less experience of yourself. What you're going to do is gain a knowledge which we actually call the elimination of ignorance, jnana nivritti, the elimination of ignorance, which causes you to identify yourself with things that you perceive. You take your being to be things that you look at. For instance, if I have an emotional state of sadness, I illumine the sadness. But that's not what I notice. I notice that I am sad. That's what we call by this, you know, what we call anyonya adyasa, this mutual superimposition. So I always take myself to be whatever the state is, whatever the condition, changing conditions are. I identify myself with them. So knowledge has to do not with having a new experience of yourself, but it has to do with differentiating the self-experience that is always already there. And so when the Upanishad or the Shruti acts as a pramana, acts as a means of knowledge, what it is doing is not giving you a new experience of yourself. It's removing, through differentiation, the things from that you've added on to yourself as appendages, you know, as your nature. You've added on all of these experiences as your nature. It has to remove all of those experiences and give them back to the world. We're not used to this. We are only used to, because of the way our body, mind, sense organs work, we're only used to gaining an experience first and then learning about the experience that we've gained. Like, for instance, I now see, I'm gaining the experience of that painting, right? Through my sense organs, I gain the experience of the painting. Now that I've gained the experience of the painting, now I can learn about the painting. So we think about this. Now I have to gain the experience of myself, and then I can learn about myself. But first I have to gain the experience of myself. So this is a problem, you know. So that's why here Ramana says that this what the Shruti means by seeing the self, because we have to use language, right? Seeing the self, knowing the self, understanding the self. The mind immediately goes into this, the mode of operation that we know, which is first we gain the experience and then we gain experience of the knowledge. We gain knowledge of the experience. But the pramana here does not work that way, because just as my eyes are a means of knowledge for gaining an experience of the painting, right? How are the eyes or any means of knowledge that I have going to work as a pramana and means of knowledge for gaining the experience of the self, which is already there as my self-experience? There is no experience to be gained, right? There's only a differentiation that has to take place. And so this, how the pramana works, what is the nature of yourself in reference to all experience, has to be, you know, clearly unfolded in many, many different ways, because we're not used to that. And this is not the concept that's even been brought over to us, to the West from the East. We're still looking for, even the whole concept of meditation is based on this. Let me have a meditative experience, you know, in order to gain knowledge of myself. Let me have a meditative experience, subject-object. That's not to negate meditation, but it does negate the way that meditation can be used and how misleading that can be. You know, say if you think that your self-knowledge is a meditative experience, then where's yourself when you're not having the meditative experience? And that's why the teaching itself has to use meditation in a particular way. It uses meditation in a way to help you differentiate yourself from the experiences that are coming and going in the same way, same manner that you've been taught at the time of teaching. So the Upanishad reveals this to you as you're listening, because the words are pointing to a fact that is here right now. And so if the words are working properly, they're eliminating that ignorance as the words are taking place. Mm. You know, because they're pointing to a fact that's meant for you to see. So that's what they're doing. And then when you sit in meditation, you sit to sit with and be with what you've recognized at the time of teaching, at the time that pramana has been in operation. That has to take place. Now the problem is this. Say that has taken place in reference to yourself, and you've recognized the teaching has worked in terms of making you recognize your own non-objectifiable nature. In recognizing that, though, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the thoughts, the moods, and the emotions, the ahankar, the I thought, everything that makes you you, you know, has now been differentiated. And you're left as conscious being. And then what do you do with all of this? Your essential nature is conscious being. And all of this belongs, all body, mind, sense organs, everything you objectify belongs to the creation, to the world of objects. Everything, it belongs to the world of things that can be objectified. And so then the question comes, what is the relationship of myself, being, the conscious being, to this objectified world that includes my body, mind, sense organs, everything that I have taken to be essentially me? So it's a whole different situation then. Because now I become someone who is not limited by the things that are objectified by me. So if I become one who's not limited by the things that are objectified, you know, then what is my nature? Just imagine this. If I'm not limited by the things because they're objectified, just like I'm not limited by that table, you know, it's not me. The table is not me. I'm not limited by the table. If the table walks out of the room or something happens to it, nothing happens to me. So if I'm not limited by what is objectified, or it's not a comment on my nature, which is non-objectifiable, there's really no relationship between, in a sense, what is non-objectifiable and what is objectifiable, then what is my relationship as a conscious being to this whole creation? Because body, mind, sense organs, everything's been given to the creation. So what's my relationship to it? It's an interesting dilemma. It's both very easy to understand and not easy to understand. So if you can understand it in reference to this room, you can understand it in reference to the infinite creation. Just all you need to do is understand it in reference to the room. So in reference to this room, I am looking at you through my sense organs, and I am different from you. Right? I'm here, you're there, the couch is there. And so we are all placed in this room and experiencing each other through our mind and sense organs that are located in our body. That's our experience. Right? At first blush, that's our experience. But I can break this experience down differently. I can say, well, actually what is happening to all of us at this moment is that each one of us is experiencing this room and everyone in it through these sense organs, which are forming a thought modification in my mind, right? Because if I'm looking at you and my mind is daydreaming, I'm not seeing you, I'm seeing the daydream. And so my mind has to back my eyes in order to see you, right? And so what I'm actually seeing and experiencing is not you, but it is a thought modification in my mind that is generated by my sense organs. Everybody see that? Just think like this. If you have to look at these sense organs only function if you have a if your mind is using them. Right? So you know that. So like if you're how many times have you read a page and then you realize I was reading this book, but I was really doing something else. I have no idea. This even happens when you're driving. You know, all this time has passed and you find yourself there and what the heck were you doing? You know. Swamiji's always joking when he's talking and when he comes to use this example, he's giving a lecture or something and he'll see some student sitting there, you know, absolutely in stone silence. No movement, no eye movement, just frozen in space as he's talking away and people are laughing, the student's just... And then they're like, you know, because you're off with your mind. So what you're experiencing really is your mind. Okay? So now I am aware of this room through my eyes, for I'm just looking at perception, through my eyes, which forms a thought modification in my mind, which I illumined, which I'm aware of. Right? So now you say like that, in this room, if you're just aware of this room for the moment, not only are you aware of everything else in the room, you're also aware of your own body. Your own body is also in the room, and that's part of your perception, that's part of the mental cognition. You're also aware if your sense organs are working or not, if you're, you know, whatever's going on in your body, you're aware of that. If you're focused on that, you're just aware of what you're focused on. You know? You could even be aware of in the mind, the vritti, the thought modification of this perception. And there can also be multitasking with other thoughts and moods and emotions walking through in this particular mental arena, which you are illuminating. Okay? Now the question is, the conscious being illumine this thought modification. Whatever it may be. We'll just slow it down and take one thought modification. You're illumining that. Which part are you illumining? Which part of it are you illumining? Let's say I'm illumining all of it. Yes, you're illumining all of it. And so your experience of the self illumining all of it, if I were to talk about it in reference to this room, I would say, I would use this language. This wall is known, this chair is known, this person is known, this rug is known, this chair is known, this body is known, this book is known, these eyeglasses are known, my ears are known, whatever comes into my perception is known. It means it enjoys consciousness, it is illumined. That's what is known means. There is nothing in this room right now, from my standpoint, that is not known. In other words, whatever is in the thought modification, that is known. That is illumined. So I'm using this as synonyms. Whatever is in this thought modification, it is known, it is illumined. By who? By me, by consciousness. I'm the conscious being. So the subject illumines the entirety of the room. So, from the standpoint of the mind, which is what you're actually experiencing. So awareness illumines the mind. Okay? Now you would say, I illumine the contents of the room, which includes the body, the mind, the sense organs, the perceptions. It includes everything equally in the room. And so then I could say like this, my being, the conscious being that I am, illumines everything in the thought modification which is given to me through sense perception. So that means that I am the self that illumines the room, not the self that illumines the body, which through the sense organs illumined the room. Because when I move my experience inward, I illumine the thought modification. And every part of the thought modification is illumined equally. Okay. Now, if that is the case for the room, that is going to be, and for every individual in the room, that will be the case for the universe. And the reason that that would be the case for the universe is that the only thing that is non-objectifiable is consciousness itself. Anything that exists within duality, right, is objectifiable. Anything that can be objectified can be objectified. Any object within duality or the whole of duality, it doesn't make any difference. If it's objectifiable, it is differentiated from the subject and therefore illumined by the subject. You see, I'm being pretty terse here, but you have to kind of contemplate on this. But now, if I were to say, you know, if the Shruti is to say one should know Ishvara, one should know the creation, one should know the form of Ishvara, means the whole manifest creation that is a conscious being. Now you think, from this standpoint of the body, mind, sense organs, you know, that you can know that. And that isn't possible. But from the standpoint of the conscious being, which is the self, which is the subject, you can know completely. And you can know the relationship of that non-objectifiable subject to the objectifiable world. The non-objectifiable subject that you are has to be the non-objectifiable subject that Ishvara is. Because with consciousness itself, the conscious being that you are, if it's non-objectifiable, there can't be two. Can you see that? If you can't objectify yourself to make two, and you can't objectify yourself to make two, what is the difference between your non-objectifiable self and your non-objectifiable self to say that there's two? What's dividing? What's dividing you from you from you? Space? Space is objectifiable. Anything within duality is objectifiable. Anything within duality comes and goes. Consciousness is the only thing there that's not objectifiable. And so how am I as a conscious being different from you? Because the only things that can divide us are things that are not within the same realm of being that we are. And so the consciousness that I am is the consciousness that you are, is the consciousness that the plant is the consciousness that the rug is. It's only that the rug is known, and I take myself to be a knower from the standpoint of the mind. But actually, the whole thing is equally objectifiable. And so how can I differentiate my being from your being, from your being, from your being, from Ishvara's being? If I can't differentiate my being from your being, then I can't differentiate my being from any being. Right? Because there's nothing to come in between. So think of it like this. If I have a imagination, like if I were to ask you to close your eyes and imagine this room, just have an imagination, which you're perfectly capable of doing, you just close your eyes and you imagine the room.
whatever memory you have of the room will be your imagination. You have an imagination of the room. And then you would say yes in the imagination of the room, right? The room comes, the imagination comes from me, and it's sustained by me, and it resolves into me. I am the self of that imagination of the room. And I'm the self of absolutely everything in it. So if I ask you to imagine something, which is also a thought modification, you'll have no problem seeing your being and your consciousness as the truth of that thought. Right? It's still a thought. An imagination is a thought. If I ask you to imagine an ocean scene, you won't have no trouble. You can have people walking in it and everything. You'll have no trouble seeing that your being is the self of that imagination. It's the consciousness and the being that enlivens that imagination. The imagination, the thought comes and it goes. But if it's a perceptual thought, even though the thoughts are equal, thought is thought. Whether it's an imaginary thought, an emotional thought, a perceptual thought, a thought is the thought. Your relationship to the thought is the same. You're the self of the thought. You're the self of everything within the dual experience, equally the self of everything within that dual experience. So if that is so, if that's understood, what it means to have that consciousness is not objectifiable, then there can't be two of you. And if there can't be two of you, then you are Ishvara from the standpoint of yourself. Just like I am you, I am also Ishvara. There's only one conscious being. If there's only one conscious being, that one conscious being you can fully, completely know. Only because you are that. And the reason I know it, I can fully, completely know myself, is because I can differentiate the self, which is pure consciousness. It doesn't have a right side consciousness and a left side consciousness, or a high upper consciousness and a lower consciousness. It is only purely consciousness. And so you either know yourself or you don't, because it's not like there's has a lot of moving parts. There's no parts. So you just know me, you recognize that self, or you don't. And if you recognize yourself, then the question is this. Are you yourself, or are you something that you're looking at? Are you yourself, or are you something that you experience coming and going? You say, no, I'm myself. I'm not what I experience coming and going. I'm myself, and I'm always exactly the same. So you would say that. Now, then what would you say about Ishvara? Would Ishvara say, you know, I'm all of this universe that's coming and going and continually changing? Or I'm the one, you know, I'm the conscious being, you know, that enlivens that continually moving and changing universe? Ishvara would say, no, I'm the conscious being. And you would say, yeah, I'm the conscious being. That's who I am. And it is in that way that you know immediately and directly who Ishvara is, because Ishvara himself would say, I am the conscious being. What you don't know is what is going on in this infinite manifestation of the creation. And who would know that? Either that from the standpoint of Ishvara, that creation is known from its own standpoint, like an infinite mind. The creation has to be there to be known, like an infinite mind. Or from your standpoint, as a jiva, you will know that creation through your sense organs. And so if you have to know the creation through your sense organs, you don't have a prayer in the world, right? Of you as an infinite, as a finite jiva experiencing this creation. It's just like you can be your own Ishvara by imagining yourself a world and filling it with people. You know, people and animals, just in your imagination. I usually use a meadow example. You imagine a meadow and put people and animals in it in different settings. And then you so easily are the self of that imagination, of that meadow or that world. You're easily the self of it. The whole meadow is known. But you look at it from the standpoint of anyone in the meadow, and their knowledge is so limited, because they're viewing the meadow or they're viewing the world through a limited antakarana, a limited mind and limited sense organs. Their knowledge is minuscule compared to the whole imagination that comes from you. So you become the Ishwara, you are the Lord of the imagination. But everyone in the imagination is a jiva, like a jiva, an individual. Their knowledge is extremely limited compared to yours. Swamiji uses the example sometimes, think of this, you know, take your little toe, a cell in your little toe, and imagine if it is able to have an experience. So imagine a cell in your little toe having sense organs, you know. It has sense organs, it's looking all around, you know, as it's moving in its little world, its little toe world. And just, could it conceive of, you know, the foot, let alone the whole body, let alone the body in this room? But we're in a situation like that, where it's worse. It's inconceivable. The limited nature of the knowledge that we have through our sense organs and the antakarana compared to the whole. So there's no way for the jiva to know Ishwara in terms of name and form. But to know Ishwara in terms of self, the very self that you are, is the self that Ishwara is. It's not part of the self. It is the self. Because that which is non-objectifiable is not partial into parts. There's no duality there. So you are not a partial experience. You never, even now from your own perspective, that the self-experience that you have is the self-experience that's there. There is not another one. The self-experience that you are is the self-experience that Ishwara is the self-experience that the Martian is the self-experience that your cat is, you know, or that a mosquito is. The self-experience that is there is the nature of the self. It's not an experience that this upadi, this body or chair is having. The me experience that makes me is the self. It's not that the mind is having the experience of me. I am the experience of me that penetrates all experience that I have. You know, like I don't identify as, I'm looking in this room, I don't say I am the chair, I say I am this body. But if I break down the experience, the being that I am is not something that I'm looking at when I look at the chair. I don't look at my being when I look at the chair, but the chair enjoys my being because the chair is. The experience of being itself is the experience of amness, arness, and isness. There is no objectified experience of being. I am the experience of being. That's the nature of consciousness itself. And similarly, everything I don't say, you know, when I say I know the couch, I don't say by knowing the couch I know myself. But the consciousness is superimposed on the couch, and then I take the couch to be known, where actually the knownness is what is constant, and the couch is enjoying the knownness. And I say, it is known, it is known, it is known, it is known. Knownness never changes. I can get rid of the whole creation, and what is known. I am known. Consciousness is the experience of being known. And you look at it, you think that you're giving, that this is known and this is known from its own standpoint. It isn't. The knownness is consciousness, and it never alters in any way. And so what that means is that I have never have an experience away from my own being. And when I recognize that, then my being is Ishwara and this jiva is eaten. That's why he says, anibhavanam. You know, it's eaten. The experience, the difference between me and Ishwara, of the individual jiva and Ishwara, is annihilated completely. Because this body, mind, sense organs belongs to the whole, but this whole enjoys one consciousness. So the idea of a separate consciousness is subsumed completely by the recognition that that separate consciousness doesn't exist. The separate consciousness is my being. So here when he says, in the end he says, you know, this knowledge, the knowledge of Ishvara is, what is it really? It's when my own being is swallowed by that, where I recognize that my own being, in fact, is Ishvara. My own being is the very, is the being which is Ishvara. It's not that this little jiva has been chewed up. The individual has been chewed up. It's just that the individual has been, that what you thought was an individual subject to birth and death, you recognize that this individuality, which is me, is in fact Ishvara. You know, it's just like, and you can see the complexity of trying to teach this by just imagining yourself as the Ishvara of the dream, or the Ishvara of the meadow. And one of the people that are walking through the meadow becomes a mumukshu, somebody who wants self-knowledge. What do they have to realize? That they are the self from which the whole dream has come. So their individuality is totally eaten by this knowledge into the recognition that I am the one from whom the whole has come. The individuality is totally taken away. But then that language is very misleading, because then you think I'm going to lose myself. Or in fact, you can never lose yourself. You are the self of the whole. You're non-objectifiable. There can never be a change in you in any way, and never has been, never will be. Even from moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, that's something for the mind to differentiate, to be recognized. And so that is what the whole teaching is about. So we'll stop there and do the next one. Next week. Just Purnamada, Purnamidam, Purnat, Purnamadachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vasishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha, Hari Om.